We have a very full agenda this evening. And let's go ahead and do a roll call. I need to change my view here because I cannot see everyone. Oh, we might need to wait a couple of minutes to do the roll call. Dwayne and Adrian were in the previous meeting with us, so they should be along shortly. So we will have a quorum to start the meeting. Hi, Justin, and hi, Jason.
Hey, Josefina.
Hello. Thanks for having us again.
Yes, hello.
Yes. Thanks for being here. Wailing is here, I see. Hi, Wailing.
Hello, I'm here.
And thank you in advance, David, for supporting this meeting. All right, so let's go ahead and do the roll call. So let's see, Jason Ryman.
Here.
Thank you. Wailing Huber.
Here.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton in the clouds, in the sky.
I'm here. Thanks, Josefina.
Thank you. And Josefina Alvarado Mena, for the record, I am here as well. Let me just make sure that I'm also looking at this agenda. We will take public comment now on any closed session items. Do we have anybody for public comment? And also let me note for the record that Adrian Barnes joined the meeting. Adrian?
Here. Hi, Josefina.
Thank you. Hello. So seeing that there is no public comment, we're going to go ahead and recess to closed session. David, will you be moving us to a meeting room?
Yes, I will create one for you guys.
Thank you for that.
And just before I note, what is the plan for chat during the regular open session? Are we leaving it closed and just open it during public comment? Is that sort of the...
We will follow the last meeting protocol. So we will leave it open, but we will monitor it. And if there is an appropriate activity in the chat, then we will have to shut it down.
Okay, got it. I'm going to make it so everybody can add themselves into the meeting. And if anybody needs help with that, I can do that.
Great, thank you.
David, I'm not seeing the option to join closed.
Okay, I will go ahead and assign you to it.
Thank you. There we go.
Same for me, David.
Okay.
Yeah, here we go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Board meeting of the OSA Oakland School for the Arts Board of Directors. We will start with the roll call. Let's see. Actually, we already did the roll call. So a report out from closed session. We do not have any actions to report out of the closed session. We are reconvening in the public section of the meeting. I do need to call the meeting to order again and to take attendance. We will do the land acknowledgement. And Wailing Huber will do the land acknowledgement this evening. So let me start with Wailing Huber.
Here.
Thank you. Adrian Barnes.
Here.
Thank you. Jason Ryman.
Here.
Thank you. And Dwayne Walton.
Here.
Thank you, Dwayne. Okay, the meeting is called to order. The meeting norms. The board recognizes the importance of all stakeholder voices at OSA. Collaboration and community are essential to the viability of our school. The purpose of this meeting is for our board of directors to meet with each other and conduct school business, as well as to receive input from the school staff and the community via public comment. Public comment may be made on topics that relate to the school. Comment on non-agenda items may be made at the end of the meeting. After hearing a report, members of the public have the opportunity to offer comments in a designated time prior to the board discussion of that agenda item. Outside of public comment, members of the public are also welcome to observe the meeting. Please use the raise hand function to make public comment. If you cannot use the raise hand function, you can sign up for public comment in the chat. We want to be sure to see all the signups, so keeping the chat clear when public comment signups are being called for is appreciated. You may sign up for public comment at any time prior to the conclusion of public comment for that agenda item. You do not need to wait for public comment to be called to sign up, and may sign up for public comment during the presentation of the report or at any time prior. You are not required to include your name with the comment. If you wish to remain anonymous, for ease of identifying speakers, please provide a unique and appropriate pseudonym. Due to student and employee privacy laws, please refrain from using the name or any information that could imply the identity of any student or employee. Public comment will be capped at 90 seconds per speaker. To be sure of hearing from a variety of people, minutes may not be transferred to other speakers. The board cannot respond to public comment on non-agenda items. This does not mean the board is not listening. Staff will do our best to respond to chat comments throughout the meeting, but may not be able to respond to every single one. To be sure your comments are heard by board members, please sign up for public comment. If the comment thread becomes harassing or abusive or includes information, the name, or any information that could imply the identity of any student or employee, staff reserves the right to turn off the chat at its discretion. We strive to be a learning community that learns from each other. We are also a community comprised of people who care very deeply about the school. We recognize that all voices are not treated equally in our society, but aim to value and respect all voices equally in this forum. We may have different ideas of how to achieve goals, and we may feel passionately about our points of view. This needs to be a safe space for a variety of opinions. Finally, we address each other in a respectful manner to foster collaboration, build community, and to model good citizenship to our students. For clarification on the recording, board members should please state their names prior to speaking. The meeting is being recorded and the audio is posted on the school website. I'm gonna turn it over to Wai-Ling for the land acknowledgement.
Thank you, Ms. Vina. OSA is situated on Huchin, the unceded territories of the Chochenyo-speaking Lushan Ohlone peoples who have lived upon this land since the beginning of time. Indigenous peoples in California, the Americas, and around the world are still here. OSA recognizes the historic genocide and ethnic cleansing inflicted upon Indigenous peoples in California and the Americas, including their forced removal from ancestral lands and the deliberate and systematic destruction of their communities and culture. These conditions are ongoing, and Indigenous people have been fighting against cultural erasure and for their sovereignty since the beginning of colonialization. To this end, we as a community strive to honor the Indigenous members of our community, uplift their voices and contributions to arts and culture, center Indigenous people's worldviews in our classrooms, and support Indigenous sovereignty everywhere. This land acknowledgement is a small act in supporting Indigenous communities and centering the justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion work within the Oakland School for the Arts. Solidarity with Indigenous nations can include donating time and money to Indigenous-led organizations, amplifying the voices of Indigenous people, leading grassroots change movements, and returning land.
Thank you. And let me also welcome Daz, our student board member, to the meeting. Daz, I'm sorry I did not call your name in the roll call. Are you here? I see you. I think you're muted. Okay. I see you. Thank you. So let's go to the public comment. Do we have anyone for general public comment on non-agenda items? Okay, seeing that there are none, then we will go to Daz for the student representative report.
Oh, there we go. Hi, everyone. My name is Daz. I am the student body president of OSA. And just to get started, so far, like, I wanted to just address some of the school issues or some of the school's recent actions that have happened that students feel are needed to know. So the student resource space is now available and running. Me and the rest of the student council have talked to Ms. Zog and Ms. Romy and other mental health teachers about their spaces used for the student resource rooms, where we were providing menstrual items, toothpaste, condoms, deodorant, and job opportunities postings. It is a longing project that we've been working on. We're also trying to fund for a suite ballroom. We began working on this when we first started out. We're currently trying to address the OSA advisory status and the current conditions in the status. We fear that the advisory is not being upheld to its standards, as far as it's being different than what people want it to be. And then we also wanted to address the leadership is working to bring students awareness of code 51512, which states that students are not allowed to film or record during class hours without giving consent of the classroom teacher or school officials. There's been instances on campus where this has happened, and we should make sure that students my fellow students are aware of this. And the last but not least, some good news is the student council and the leadership team are both working on the prom and future dances for both middle school and high school. Thank you.
Thank you for that report, Daz. Is there any public comment? Okay, seeing that there is no, Maury, go ahead.
I don't know if this can be addressed, but Daz, thank you for that report. I would actually like to know more about the student concerns of advisory not reflecting what students are looking for. And I don't know if that can be answered now or it's something we can talk about later, but that's it.
Daz, did you want to elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yes. So the students are questioning the current like structure as far as like what advisory is supposed to be doing. A lot of students find that is not useful or it's like not a way. It's not what it was structured to be. So a lot of advisory teachers have been making it their own class, like far as discussing things that they feel that are need to address or, you know, just asking how people's day are or just making conversation in which contributes in a beneficial way, far as like more of like the structured way of having to feel surveyed. Just that kind of structure seems that it's been kind of boring to students and it's been more fun just talking about like normal issues or just talking about like school in general or whatever topic comes to mind.
Okay, thank you for that. Let me open it up for any board comments or board questions. No, I don't see any or hear any. Daz, I wanted to thank you for your report and ask also if maybe next meeting you could bring forward some recommendations as to how advisory might be improved from the student perspective.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, then we will move on to our next item of business. We have the consent agenda. On the next up, we have the minute approval of the minutes, the board finding of public safety related to the continued use of video conferencing for the meetings. We have the Measure G1 carryover justification form, and then we have as an informational item the draft of the SARC. So we will take public comment on the consent agenda. Seeing that there is no public comment on the consent agenda, I will entertain a motion from a board member to pass the consent agenda.
I make a motion, Josefina. Dwayne.
Thank you, Wiling. Second. Any discussion on the consent agenda?
May I ask that we remove the 10:28 minutes approval
because I was not there and would need to abstain, but would like to vote on the rest.
Yes, we can do that. I think that we have a public speaker now, Josh.
Hi, greetings. Is the resolution regarding the student vaccine policy no longer on this evening's agenda?
That is not on this regular meeting agenda. That is agendized for the special meeting immediately following the conclusion of this regular meeting.
Which starts at what time?
Which is not totally determined. I would estimate that would start around 7:00.
Wow. Okay, thank you. I saw that listed as part of the consent agenda.
Yes, that is for the special meeting. So thank you, Adrian. So we will pull the minutes off of this consent agenda and we will vote on the minutes separately immediately after we pass the consent agenda. So with that amendment, actually, I guess I need to ask Dwayne if he will accept that amendment to his motion.
I do, yeah, thank you.
Great, and Wai-Ling, do you second that?
I do.
Okay, great. So let's do the roll call vote. Adrian Barnes?
Yes, and thank you.
Yes. Wai-Ling Huber?
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman? Let's go to Dwayne Walton?
Yep, so move, approve.
Thank you. And I will vote yes on that too. Josefina Alvarado Mena for the record. Let's now consider the minutes. If we could have a motion on approval of the minutes.
Move to approve.
Thank you, Wai-Ling. Second on that motion?
I'll second, Josefina.
Thank you, Dwayne. Any discussion on the minutes before we vote? Okay, then let's go ahead and do the roll call vote. Adrian Barnes?
Abstain.
Thank you. Wai-Ling Huber?
Yes.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton?
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman? Okay, I think we might have missed.
Sorry, yes.
Thank Sorry. You. I also vote yes, Josefina Alvarado Mena. So moving on this agenda, the next item on it is the complaint review and policy procedure update. And there is just one question for clarification. There will be public comment on the vaccine mandate policy during the special meeting following this regular meeting. Board policies and procedures, do we have a staff presentation on this?
Hi, Josefina. For the board policies and procedures, we were gonna have Jason Miller share out.
Great, okay, Jason Miller, let me introduce you. Jason Miller is a member of our firm, Young, Mini, and Core, that is one of the legal firms that represents OSA. So Jason, I'm going to bring you up to the deck.
Great, well, good evening, board and guests. Again, my name is Jason Miller. I'm with Young, Mini, and Core. We represent the majority of the charter schools in the state. I've been working very closely with staff and administration and the board regarding the incidents of September 29th and the aftermath thereof. And one place that we really wanted to make a concrete change is making sure that all policies and procedures related to the complaint process were both updated and legally current, also very clear, and clearly accessible to those that need to see them. This is gonna be a part of a much larger project, which is going to be reviewing all OSA policies and procedures and handbooks to ensure everything is current and that everything is legal. We have had a great deal of administrative change in the last several years. And because of that, there's sort of a lack of a central repository of policies and procedures. So we're going to be helping with that. Tonight, I bring the first three, and these are complaint policies. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the difference between the three and why we have three different complaint policies for the charter school. The first is going to be the most broad, and that is the general complaint policy. And that's going to be the policy that we use and we follow for any complaints that are not included in one of the two pieces that will follow. So the general complaint policy would be, well, it might be easier for me to come back to general complaints after I talk about the other two first. So the two mandatory federal policies are the UCP, which is the Uniform Complaint Procedures Policy, and the Title IX policy. Until very recently, the Title IX policy and the UCP policy were very similar, or could be very similar. Those procedures were kind of hand in glove. With recent changes in regulations, Title IX has a little bit different of a process to it. So I'll talk through the UCP policy first. Board, do you have it in front of you, or would you like me to bring it up on the screen?
If you could bring it up on the screen, that would be helpful.
Terrific.
Thank you.
All right, are we seeing it?
Yes, we are. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you. So this is the Uniform Complaint Policy and Procedures. And this is going to be the policy and procedure we follow under complaints that are certain sorts of both state and federal complaints that are specific. The first type will be anything regarding harassment, discrimination, intimidation, or bullying. And there's going to be a strange nexus here when we talk about Title IX and why it's a little bit different. The second would be any complaints alleging a violation of enumerated state or federal programs. Not all of these are going to apply to OSA, but staff determined that they want the full gamut listed in case these things do add. And these are everything from as broad as the Every Student Succeeds Act and special education, and as specific as, ROP programs, adult education, lactation programs that may or may not apply. The third is, that's covered under UCP, is any allegation there's been a pupil fee assigned. In California, we have free public education, there can be no kind of pay to play when it comes to school. And this is very specific about what would be considered this and how you file a UCP complaint regarding a pupil fee. Another is any complaints regarding the LCAP or the local control funding formula, that if those aren't handled properly or there's allegations that are happening properly, those go through UCP. The compliance officer at OSA for UCP is Mr. Oz. As the principal, as supervised by the director. This is just telling what annual notice needs to provide in a student handbook. As I said, that's one more thing that our firm is reviewing, is the student handbook, to make sure that all of these pieces are met. And then it talks about the procedures regarding what a UCP procedure looks like. Importantly, there's some time limits here that need to be paid attention to. OSA is elected to include a mediation step. So we're not going straight from complaint to formal investigation, but we allow a period there for mediation in some cases. And then the idea of a final written decision, which has very specific requirements for it. At this point, that would be something that hopefully the staff would be working with legal counsel on to ensure that the UCP process was done correctly and that the format applied. There is an appeal right to the state, and this policy will include the description of what happens to that, a comment of what happens regarding civil law remedies, i.e. can individuals sue the school for these violations, and there's processes for that. We included a form that should be easy for staff to use, that simple check boxes as far as what programs or what discrimination is being alleged, and then place to put that complaint together and submit to Mr. Oz. This will replace the UCP complaint form that has currently been used and is currently online. So that's the UCP. Now gonna move to, let's see, I'm gonna stop share. And move to the, yes. This is the Title IX harassment policy. And Title IX is, as you probably know, is gender-based discrimination and gender-based harassment and sexual violence is going to be what's covered under here. There is a nexus between the UCP and the Title IX in that discrimination generally is handled under UCP, but sexual harassment is specifically handled under a Title IX, which is a more thorough and a more codified process.
Jason, you might need to adjust your Zoom because we cannot see the whole document, the whole page.
Okay, let me, is that any better? It says my screen share is paused.
You might need to stop sharing and then.
Yeah, let me try it again. Is that it?
That's it, thank you.
Terrific. So this is going to be much more specific and much more in the weeds, if you will, regarding exactly what these terms mean. There's a lot of definition sections here. A lot of this is aligned with the penal code regarding definitions of what these various actions are or can be. And then we have a grievance procedure as well under Title IX. And as we'll see, this is a little bit different than the grievance procedure under UCP. First off, rather than Mr. Oz, the principal being the facilitator for UCP, Katie is the Title IX coordinator, so we'll be handling these investigations or at least taking these in. A key thing, and these are changes that were promulgated to Title IX under the previous presidential administration, and the focus upon them is much more rights for the accused. And these are going to be, so starting at the beginning, there's a whole pre-complaint process identified here, which is called a report. So the report handles before the complaint. A student can come or a employee can come to the Title IX coordinator and report what has happened. And just by reporting, that triggers responsibilities for the school to provide support for that student called supportive measures, and actually supportive measures for the accused student as well. And that's before they decide whether or not they need to file a complaint. If they then file a formal complaint, of sexual harassment is a term of art. It does need to be signed, and it does need to be put in writing by either the coordinator or the complainant. And we talk a little bit about here about how that decision should be made. And one of the things to know in a Title IX complaint that sometimes dissuades complaints being made, and again, these are changes that happened in the last administration, are the openness of the investigation. It's not nearly as, there's no assumption of confidentiality as there is in the UCP investigation. So there's notice of the allegations that need to go out. This is the notice to the accused. There are provisions for emergency removal if there is a clear and present danger, a process of informal resolution when appropriate. The things that would trigger a dismissal of a formal complaint, withdrawing it, the respondent no longer is employed by or enrolled at OSA, for example, would trigger that. And then we talk about the investigation process. And this is a, so under Title IX, there are three principles that are important, three individuals that are important. There's the coordinator who takes in and organizes the complaint and takes in the complaint and helps draft the complaint and assists with the supportive measures. And then there's a separate person that is the investigator, and that does need to be a separate person. We advise in any formal Title IX complaint that be a professional investigator to come in, but it doesn't necessarily need to be that way, but that is what we advise. That investigator will then do an impartial investigation, really from the ground up, interview witnesses, collect evidence. Both parties get to review all evidence and respond to it. And then there's a third party the investigator is going to give you just a list of facts. We're going to give you a story. This is what happened the best we can tell. This is what we know. This is what we think. And they're not going to make any judgment on what should happen as a result of those facts. That falls to a third person called the decision maker, who cannot be the coordinator and cannot be the investigator. So the decision maker then reviews the investigator's fact finding and decides whether or not there was the allegation has been proven to the appropriate evidentiary standard. And then after that, we go to the potential discipline. There's also a right of appeal, and that's a right of appeal for either side, either the accused or the accusor. And that appeal usually would go to the board. So usually what we're gonna see is the investigator is an independent investigator, the decision maker is the administrator, school administrator, executive director, principal, and the appeal would be to the board. And then there's some language about record keeping. And then again, we provided a form for you to use. So that's what a Title IX investigation looks like. Again, it's a little bit different process than UCP. A critical difference is there is no statute of limitations on a Title IX investigation. We haven't gotten there yet, but there's some thought that might be parallel to the criminal statute of limitations, which I believe is until the complainant turns 40. So it's a very, very long statute of limitations. The UCP, on the other hand, has a 6-month. The individual needs to report the discrimination or the harassment within 6 months in order to have a colorable UCP complaint. So I guess I probably should have started with those two, because the general complaint process is anything else. So the general complaint process is anything that is not one of those two. And it's basically the idea is that the executive director investigates fairly is how that goes. It's that sort of broad. So those are the three policies. They're largely just statements of law and codifying what the federal and state requirements are for those. There's not a whole lot to tinker with. But I wanted to present thoroughly so we understood the difference between the three different kinds of investigations, because one thing that we've realized in the matters of the last several months is that in the past, there's been some discrepancies between how those are performed. I'm seeing a question from Karen in the chat. Who's the current ombudsman at OSA? I don't believe OSA has an ombudsman right now. That's not a requirement under charter school law.
Okay, so thank you, Jason. Let's open it up for public comment, and then we'll go to board questions and comments.
And so, direction from the board, would you like me to briefly respond or just take notes and get back to you later to the public comments?
I think you can respond. I mean, we have a few minutes here on the agenda. So public comment.
Maury has a public comment.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I'm curious, I think you said Katie Zog is the coordinator for Title IX. And I think in the current situation, an external investigator was brought in, but I don't know who in the school is the decision maker. And if in general, those tend to be appointed with each separate kind of complaint, or is it one person that handles that for the school?
It's going to be a case by case basis. It's going to be appointed during the process, mainly because, you know, we want to make sure there's clear separation there. You know, we don't want the investigator to report to the decision maker, for example. You know, we don't want, or vice versa, obviously. Obviously, we want the decision maker to be anyway involved in the process of the investigation. So it's going to be different. The default would be the lead administrator. So that would be the executive director most of the time, unless there's a reason that we determine that she would delegate, or the executive director would delegate that to another party.
Next public comment from
Kava Menzies.
Hi, good evening. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Kava.
I have a question just about how the school is retroactively handling complaints that have been made to Title IX that are now being umbrellaed under the UCP.
Yes, so that's a really good question. So the Title IX provisions are only required to be handled to deal with incidents that occurred on or after August 26th of 2020. The school has the option, or has the right, to extend the same protections to older investigations. My understanding at this point from talking to staff is that they want to extend those greater protections to any students that have been accused to ensure due process.
I guess my question is for the complaints that have been submitted to the Title IX investigator, is there a transfer process that's happening to transfer them to UCP if they don't fit under the Title IX umbrella?
That hasn't happened yet, but yes, that would definitely be the way it happens. Every time a complaint comes in through the website that we set up for this, I speak with the investigator about the context, and I speak with staff as well about the context, and is this best handled by an external investigator? Is this best handled internally? Is this best handled by using UCP? Is this best handled using Title IX? Because there are situations where each of them are going to be more appropriate. You know, if somebody can file a complaint under UCP for discrimination, and then the protections of the accused aren't there as much, but they have the 6-month window, and they've got the various other statutory limits there. So it is it's a complex thought, and usually involves, you know, informing the complainant about the various options, letting them decide the way they'd like to have it handled. The exception to that would be if there is something that we determined was a real danger to the school, we could investigate under UCP even though that wasn't requested. Is that clear? It's a complicated process. I just want to make sure I'm articulating clearly.
Yep, I think that's clear. It sounds like the onus is on the school or the third party to determine where it's umbrellaed under, and then
that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Okay, thank you.
And to be more thorough in that answer, it could be both as well. So you know, there could be a sexual harassment claim that's investigated both under UCP and under Title IX at the same time.
Got it. Thank you.
Wiley, is there any other public comment?
There's a request from Karen Morphin to have the website updated, because it's currently listed as a person's name and an address, ombuds@oakarts. There's a request to have that updated.
Okay.
Is that email address going to anybody now?
Well, I think we have to do some research on that and then come back. But we do need to update the website, and the new policies, once approved, will be added to the website. So there will be some website changes related to this action tonight. So let's open it up then for board questions, board comments. Do we have any questions or comments from the board? No questions or comments, then we can accept a motion to accept these revised policies.
I so motion.
Thank you, Jason. Do we have a second?
Second, Adrian.
Thank you, Adrian. Any board discussion on the item? No, let's go ahead and call the roll call then. Adrian Barnes?
Yes.
Thank you. Wiling Huber?
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman?
Yes.
Thank you. Wayne Walton?
Yes.
Thank you. And I will also vote yes, Josefina Alvarado Mena, for the record. Okay, so let's move on to the next item on this agenda. That is the governance update. So I wanted to begin this update first with a thank you and a public notice that Steve Borg has stepped down from the board of OSA. I really want to thank Steve for his 7 years of board service and his commitment to OSA. And to just let everybody know that Steve has stepped down from the board to join the leadership team at OSA in the position of advancement and strategic communications. You'll be hearing more about this in our executive director's report, and you'll be hearing from Steve himself. But on behalf of the board, I really want to thank you, Steve, for your service and your commitment to OSA. And if you wanted to say anything on this right in this moment, you can do so.
I just want to thank you and the board for your support. And this is motivated by strategy because we're at a pivotal moment, and we have a lot of work to do to increase our visibility and our fundraising. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve, for all of that. And if any of the other board members want to make any statements to Steve in this moment, I just want to leave a little bit of space for that as well.
I just want to echo the sentiments that you shared earlier, Josefina. I'm equally excited, Steve, to have you in this new position. I think you're going to do outstanding work, and we know that our fundraising and, like you said, increasing our prominence is in good hands with you. So,
thank you.
Yeah, hey, Josefina, I just want to make a statement. Both, you know, Steve, you know, well, thank you, but kind of to the larger public, where, you know, as board members, we do, you know, we put a lot of time to identify, you know, skilled and resource individuals, and I think this is an example I want to uplift and make sure the community is aware that we were in a position, as Steve indicated, which is pivotal. And we were able to make this, you know, adjustment relatively smoothly, you know, with support from Lisa. Again, the skills that Steve present, and just overall board in terms of how we try to develop a board. So just wanted to call that out.
Thank you, Dwayne.
Thank you, Dwayne. So Wiling, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I really appreciated getting to know you better over the last year, and, you know, look forward to working with you and this with this new hat on. And thank you so much for stepping up into that role.
Thank you, Wiling.
Okay, let's keep moving on this governance update and vote. Before we get to the nomination of a new alumni board member, I did want to just give a quick update on the conversation with COSATS. We are, as part of our larger board development strategy, looking at the different stakeholder groups at OSA, looking towards the development of a shared leadership model that will make this institution more sustainable in the long term, and also continue to be relevant to the larger Oakland community and the OSA community. We had, I think, a great beginning conversation with several COSATS representatives, I think 2 weeks ago, And so we are in, we will be in ongoing conversation about how we will be partnering with the staff and the faculty at OSA through the lens of board development and also board collaboration and partnership. So I wanted to share that with the larger community. We did also move forward with meeting two candidates for the alumni seat provided by the OSA Alumni Association. We had the wonderful opportunity of meeting with Leon Jones, as well as Sophia Fasha, who were nominated by the Alumni Association. While we only had one seat at this point in our board development, we were very impressed with both candidates. But for this meeting, we are moving forward with the recommendation of Sophia. And I will also ask Dwayne to help me make this recommendation as he participated in the interviews. But Sophia is the class of 2011, very much embedded in the Oakland community now as a professional attorney, also has board experience and serves as the vice chair of the Alumni Association. Dwayne, did you want to add?
Again, we had two candidates, and I really want to acknowledge and thank the Alumni Association, you know, for supporting the two candidates that were brought forward. So I think, you know, with these two candidates, you know, the one that we'll vote on tonight, but the association is in good hands with good, you know, leadership, young leadership. So I just wanted to recognize that and thank you again.
Okay, before we vote on this nomination, we are opening it up to public comment. Is there any public comment on this item?
Can I say something?
Yes, of course.
Sorry, this is Tracy. I just wanted to take this time to thank you for this process. I know that we kind of just dropped in on you guys about a year ago and kind of been a little bit distracting or, you know, just trying to make some noise. And it only comes from a place of caring about the school. We know that there is a lot of changes and a lot of development that's happening right now and has been happening over the years. And just like I said, the first time that I came in, I am just looking for a culture and a community that is allowing everyone, whether they are or not from Oakland, to find a safe place at OSA. Because I did. And I know a lot of kids that are like me that are still going to that school now or looking to that school as influence for that. And I hope that they keep that in mind that OSA should be a safe place for everyone to grow together. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy.
So Leon Jones has asked for, to comment in the chat, and then two other people put comments in the chat, but tell me if you want to also speak. Otherwise, folks can just read the chat. But Leon Jones is asking.
Hello, hello everyone. I just want to truly extend a thank you to first the board, like I said a couple of months ago, approving this alumni seat, and then also just the Josefina and Dwayne. One thing that I can definitely take away from that interview is just the information on where the board is headed. And I'm just so excited that Sophia gets a part of it. I know the community, along with the board, are going to wrap our arms around her, but don't really need to do much because Sophia's got this and she's going to bring so much to the board and so much to the community, just as everyone else. So I just want to thank you so much for the consideration and the time, but also just big lucks and big wishes to Sophia.
Thank you.
And Principal Oz is...
Oh, thank you. Chat. I was going to not say anything, but I have to. Sophia is amazing. I'm just so proud. She was my first year at OSA in 2006. She was in my eighth grade class. I've stayed in contact with her since. She is truly a powerful human being. And I'm truly moved to see that she is now part of this leadership team. And I'm grateful to the board for hearing out our alumni and bringing forth this seat. And Leon, you're amazing. And I know your time will come. And in this moment, Sophia has a, she's a, incredible. So thank you guys so much.
Thank you for all the public comment. We will take a nomination a motion to accept this nomination. Dwayne, I don't
know. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. There we go. Can I make the motion?
Great, thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Wai-Ling. Any discussion from the board?
I just have a comment. I think this is wonderful. I'm so excited that we're adding an alum to the board. But in the future, I would love for us to receive resumes and information of nominees in advance of the meeting.
Noted. Thank you, Adrian, for that. Yes. Okay, so let's go ahead with the roll call vote. So Adrian Barnes.
Yes.
Thank you. Wai-Ling Huber.
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman.
Yes.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton.
Yes.
Thank you. And I will also vote yes, Josefina Alvarado Mena, for the record. Okay, so that motion passes. Sophia's welcome to the board. She couldn't be with us for this meeting, but she will be with us for our next meeting in January. So thank you, everybody. And let's keep moving on the agenda. We next have up the an update from the Equity Committee and a presentation and hopefully adoption of the board equity platform. David, thank you for sharing this for our conversation. This is the second time the equity platform has come before the board. The OSA Equity Committee, Board Committee, has also met on this platform two or three times. And Dwayne and I also have spent some time further developing this platform and bringing it to its current state for consideration and hopefully adoption. So this work comes out of the larger JEDI context and the acknowledgement that the equity work or the JEDI work has to be seen at all levels of the organization. And that the board has a role to play in terms of furthering the JEDI agenda on multiple levels. This equity platform aligns with the board's role in terms of governance, policy, budget, and also human resources. And this is laid out in a logic model that includes those inputs, the activities specifically related to each one of the areas of governance, the expected outcomes based on those activities listed here, and then short-term outcomes and long-term outcomes associated with this specific strategies and activities. And at the very bottom of this model, there's assumptions as well as contextual factors that give the background for this particular platform. Thank you for that, David. This document is available to the public. Let me open it up for public comment first and then for board discussion. The board has seen this a couple of times now, but is there any public comment? Wai-Ling, I think you're on mute.
Sorry, Maury has a public comment.
Hi, I'm just quickly skimming this, but I want to say that it is very exciting to see all of this equity-based work and with some very tangible kind of outcomes. So the more I read, the more excited I am. And I think this could really serve as kind of a compass for OSA as it moves forward on issues that I think the community have really wanted to call attention to in the last couple of years. So I would like to say that I appreciate all the work that has been done on this, and I look forward to reading it a little more closely.
Thank you. Any other publicly?
Any.
Okay, thank you. So we'll open this up for board conversation and questions. And I did want to say that, make one clarification here. Within the short-term outcomes, there's an aspirational goal here in terms of the 15 to 20% of OSA's budget earmarked for DEI strategy. That is an aspirational goal. And as we continue to work through the budget development processes and also moving towards a more sustainable model, this is part of the goal that we would like to achieve. But we are definitely not there yet. So board questions, comments?
I mean, I really support this. And like you said, we have seen it before and it's just in time. I'd like to pass it tonight because it's just in time for the work of the task force that's beginning. So it's exciting to have a map.
Thank you. Other board comment? No, so then we can entertain a motion to approve this equity board platform. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Adrian. A second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason. I think you just beat out Dwayne on this one.
Oh, sorry, Dwayne.
All right. Any board discussion before we vote? Okay, let's vote. Adrian Barnes?
Yes.
Thank you. Wiley Huber?
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman?
Yes.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton?
Yes.
Thank you. And Josefina Alvarado Mena, I also vote yes. And so this is unanimously approved. This will also be posted on our website so that it's easily accessible to the public. So let's continue on our agenda. We have the executive director's report. So I'm going to turn it over to Lisa.
Thank you. David, could you bring the deck up? Terrific. All right, so we'll go to the next slide. Great. So here's our, tonight we have two reports, the executive director's report and the finance report. Next slide. The executive director's report will include some guest speakers to share updates. We have Kev Choice, he's going to share some information on our Step It Up. Kayla Stepter is going to share information on student, staff, and family support that is ongoing. And Katie Zog will share some high-level student support that is ongoing over at OSA. And I'll close with sharing out some advancement updates. So next slide, and we'll welcome Kev. Is Kev Choice here?
He's here, yeah. But I think you're on mute.
Oh, yeah, you
had to unmute. Co-host.
Yeah, you had to unmute. You guys hear me? Everybody yep. Hear me? Cool. Sorry, I'm in a crazy warehouse in the middle of rehearsal, so good to join you. I've been listening. I'm going to try to make this brief. This is a similar presentation to what I did to the equity committee for the board a couple of days ago. Just starting off with our mission statement, which I feel like was very integral to our program, and I highlighted that term, that word BIPOC, Oakland Youth, who we've been making sure that we're outreaching to, connecting to, and building this program to support. I feel like having this mission statement put out in all of our materials, put out in all of our emails, put out to all of our community has really strengthened our program and the people who we serve this program this year. We got started off in October 4th was our first classes. We also have the list of all of the dates. We had a community meeting earlier in August, which was really good to just get some input from family, prospective students, and faculty on just ways we can engage community with our Step It Up program. Another thing I wanted to note is that we're going to be trying to do more connecting with our current Step It Up students at OSA and planning on a community meeting with them at a lunchtime on December 13th and December 14th. Just to kind of check in, see how things are going with them, see how ways we can support them, and just things that we used to do in the past, we kind of got away from that we want to get back to supporting our Step It Up youth at OSA and making sure they know that we're here to support them and help them through the process. We can go to the next slide. Sorry, it's hella loud here. I'm sorry. Next slide, please. These are some of our enrollment numbers. We got a total applications of 92, which is pretty much in line with previous years, with knowing how COVID has affected enrollment around all of schools around the country. Us getting 92 applicants was very, you know, very promising. We got 71 total students enrolled. These are some of the numbers per class. You know, dance is 7, engineering is 6, digital media 9, vocal 3, theater 15. And these are all kind of in line what we would usually have at Step It Up in a year, not post-pandemic. So, you know, there was some concern with that, but we're pretty much even, maybe slightly under, but around the same number of students that we would have pre-pandemic. Also just want to shout out all of our amazing faculty and teachers, including current OSA teachers, including alumni, Brother Leon Jones, also TCP, the People's Conservatory faculty, who are teaching our cardboard engineering class, which is a new class that is kind of in line with production design, really popular with the students, and also digital media class where they're doing like filmmaking, another popular class with some of our students. So demographics, multi-ethnicity at 39. And what we're noticing is that a lot of students are identifying with, you know, multiracial backgrounds and nationality, so it's kind of hard to put them in one category. We do have African-American at 20, Latinx at 8, and that's just Latinx and not any other nationality, which a lot of people did put on their application, and also Asian Pacific Islander at 4. And when we go through the enrollment and get students who actually apply to OSA and come into OSA, that's when we'll be able to get more demographic numbers to kind of see how the program has, you know, impacted our goals. Next slide. This was a slide that was requested by the equity team, just about previous number of applicants in the past. As you can see, it goes all the way back to 2016. And these are just actually applicants to the program and also those who applied, auditioned, whether they were waitlisted, denied, declined, et cetera. The number for this year, we don't have all of those because they haven't applied yet, but we do have the number of applications, which is at 92, which as we can see is slightly higher than even last year. As you can see at the bottom, it says 43 students finished program. Sometimes we get some students who don't make it all the way through if they don't meet the qualifications per class and they're not allowed to get the bonus points and things like that in the lottery process. So some of those numbers are listed at the bottom. Next slide. Step It Up outreach and community connections. Just through, you know, outreach this year was definitely a lot different because of COVID. I wasn't allowed to go to certain schools. You know, this was in the beginning of the year where, you know, campuses weren't as open, but I was able to reach out through emails, through digital social media, and really just through the support of our community. I'm seeing that the best promotion and the best outreach for Step It Up is the reputation of the program, is the connection of the families at certain schools already, and just even some of our alumni reaching out to their communities and their students' fan bases or school bases. These are just some of the schools that we have notable applications from and I've made relationships with and we've had yearly connections with. Next. I think that's it. I would like to say also, you know, thanks to the team, Jordan Carnes, Michaela Peters. This year, we really were the first day that we had Step It Up was really in the midst of a lot of turmoil at OSA, and I was really happy to see new faces, to see the excitement of the students coming to our school, engaged in the program, walking away just excited about what they're learning. So I feel like we're really continuing the legacy of Step It Up and how it's impacting our community and impacting our prospective students. And I would say the demographics that we are looking to attain are a lot stronger in a higher percentage this year because of that mission statement and because of even the application process. So I don't know if there's any questions or any comments. I don't know if y'all can hear this loud music in the back. But it's kind of
it sounded cool, Kev. You good with me?
We have a comment in the chat, but let me say specifically if anybody wants to give a public comment.
I'd like to make a comment just to say how much we appreciate the work that you've been doing, Mr. Choice, over the years. Step It Up is an especially important program to the school. It builds the foundation of making sure that we can bring to fruition the type of school that we want and really represent the very best of Oakland's kids and provide them with the exciting arts education that we know we provide at OSA. So I just want to thank you for the work that you did this year and leading up to in previous years. So thanks for everything you've done.
Thank you. And I got to shout out Kava. You know, this program is her brainchild, and she really, you know, passed the torch to me, and I appreciate that. And I'm always, you know, in debt to the work that she did to build this program, to have this program, to show me how to do it. So I'm really just following in her footsteps, and just the team and all our community. We all realize how important this is, and we're always trying to grow and improve. So it's a process, and we got some young stars that are going to be at OSA soon. So that's exciting for me.
That's great. Step It Up faculty member Leon Jones is in the comment, wants to comment.
Yeah, I just want to say, as someone that's teaching on Step It Up, it's been truly amazing. Just the responses to the fourth and fifth and some eighth grader that I have in my cohort, they just talk so much about how much it's a safe environment and how they feel like they're learning so much. And a lot of them are so excited to get engaged and try to come to OSA. So I just truly, a part of that's because of me, but also just because the program's being offered. So thank you, Kev. Thank you to the entire team, Jordan, Peters. I'm just so excited to be here and hopefully even consider keep teaching and Step It Up. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Kev, for that presentation and for all thank of your you. Work.
All right, thank you all. Y'all have a good evening. Appreciate it.
Thank you all. Thank you to the team.
So I think there are going to be more in the executive director report, right?
Yeah, back to public comment at the very, very end. So we go right into a presentation for Kayla.
Yep. Hey, everybody. Good to be here and glad to have you guys here as well. I'm just going to do a very quick rundown of some of the supports that have been happening since my last appearance at a board meeting. So we spoke before about there being several different tiers of student supports, tier one being more universal, tier two being more targeted, and tier three being like intensive supports. And so we've worked hard to like make sure that those tier three supports were in place with some external consultants coming in specifically from SpiritWorks and from Ancestral Wellness Company, which before was written as Humming Your Joy. Same people, just with the LLC name correct now. And so those have been put in place. We've got all that solidified as well, and are now like the logistics are happening, finding who are the folks who are interested in participating, finding times that work for those families and for those students as well. We have our tier two supports that are happening as well, which is like activating our mental health and wellness team and making sure that teachers have clear instructions for how to service students who are re-entering the school and make sure they have safety plans in place. And with that being said, we're going to be doing some staff-wide training on restorative justice, staff-wide training on sexual harassment and healthy relationships, and also doing a working with a partnership with Beats, Rhymes, and Life. I want to shout out Dr. Dolores Thompson, who kind of made this connection happen. And so we'll be thinking about how do we like marry, or how can counseling and hip hop be married together? And then finally, tier one is going to be like universal supports. And so we're going to be doing some healthy relationship crash courses in the next semester for students. And then revising, we're going to be looking at how to revise school policies and procedures, which will be led by Katie Zog. You can go to the next slide. I wanted to talk a little bit about what these lessons will look like for students. It'll be 2 to 3 lessons around healthy relationships, intimate partner violence, sexual violence prevention, decision-making, all that good stuff. And actually, this is something that is already being taught at OSA. The curriculum already exists. It's called Teen Talk, and it meets the California Educational Code for, I believe, 7th through 12th grade students. And the thing right now is that at this point, it is taught to 7th graders and 9th graders. So what we're going to do is continue to do that for our 7th and 9th graders, but we are going to also intentionally have some lessons for 6th, 8th, 10th, 11th, 12th as well, so that those students have an opportunity to learn too. The facilitator, or this is going to happen during class time. And so we're going to, facilitators will be classroom teachers who are going to volunteer and be trained up by the person who leads our health class, which is Maya Levine. And that's going to happen, and that training will happen in January. You can go to the next slide. These are the folks who are working with our students and our families as well. As I mentioned before, my first and top priority was to provide the supports to the folks who like were most impacted. And so the two groups that we're working with are Ancestral Wellness, Kendall Roberts and Destiny Webster, and then Spirit Works, Sizwe Andrews Abaka and Majan Alkabulan Abaka as well. I'm sorry if I messed that up. And both of these groups are working with students. They're also working with families as well. For sake of time, I did not include all their bios, but when they send out these slides, you'll be able to get all the links to all their websites and all that other stuff, as well as their bios. You can go to the next slide. As for staff supports, we've been working with Annette Oropesa, who's been kind of working on facilitating some restorative justice circles and like working with our staff to see what the needs are currently. She's also been meeting with me weekly, which has been really awesome to have that support. Based on a poll that we gave out, the three trainings that we're going to have first are around sexual harassment in schools. That'll be December 8th. From there, will be an intro to restorative justice. And then on February 2nd, we'll have a panel around Title IX policies and procedures as well. Those were the three topics that staff felt like they wanted the most knowledge on. So that's what we're going to do as well. And then finally, Katie's going to be creating groups to like look at policies and procedures. Next slide, I think that might be it for me. Oh no, last one, sorry. And then as for support for families. So we, again, started off with like families that were most impacted. And now we're kind of expanding that out. So there's going to be three levels of this: empathy, education, and engagement. So I'm going to be reaching out to have some one info sessions, but also some listening sessions as well to figure out what are some of the needs around the walkout and what has happened since then, but also just generally speaking. I think it's important to just hear from all of you. These are going to be really intentional because obviously we can't have all focus, like everybody in the community speak at once. So I'll be having several different sessions where we can just kind of listen and learn, or where I can just listen and learn. Also some education. So I'll be sending out a poll to see what are some of the things that families think that they need to be educated on and what trainings we can make available. And then finally, again, going back to what we were talking about for this work on policies and procedures, families who are interested, people who are interested are invited to that as well. And I think that is it for me. We're holding public comment till later, Lisa, or should I accept the now? Okay, later, gotcha.
Oh, hi, David, you can actually put it up. Those are my slides next. If you don't mind, you could put the slideshow. Thanks so much. hi, good night, everybody. My name is Katie Zog. I'm the assistant principal. I just kind of wanted to give a big picture perspective of what student services are in place at OSA. A lot of times there's just a lot of acronyms used, and people ask these questions around what teams are in place, who who to go to for what and things like that. So this is an opportunity to just kind of give a big picture overview. First and foremost, I think, as you all know, you read the news or hear the news and have students in other schools. We are not alone in experiencing just the struggles that have come with returning to in-person instruction. Significant uptick in mental health and academic support needs. I think we underestimated it. And now we're sort of working with what our resources are to make sure we are providing support for all 792 students. I just kind of wanted to break down some of the acronyms that you often hear. We have a coordination of services team, a student study team, and a mental health team. Our COST team, which is our coordination of services, is Ms. Schultz, who is also an academic counselor, Ms. Levine, who's our intervention specialist and health teacher, and me. Our student success team is, again, Ms. Schultz, Ms. Levine, me, Ms. Snyder, who's also the college and career counselor, and Mr. Roos, who is our dean of students and COVID liaison. Our mental health team, Ms. Levine, me, Ms. Utah Powell, Willa Williams, Teresa Cabot-Zinn, who are all part-time people who together work around 5 days a week put together. And then, of course, Dr. Wander, who also is the SPED psychologist. Our 504 case managers are Ms. Schultz and Ms. Snyder. So in addition to their academic counseling, they're also taking on those roles. How students are referred to all of these teams starts through a student services referral process. Teachers can refer students to us, staff can refer, they complete a survey that's sent out, and they can report on attendance, behavior, academic, or wellness concerns. And it's not just a GPA that can trigger this. We ask teachers to really consider students who may just seem disconnected, are struggling to access curriculum or engage with the community in the classroom and outside the classroom. All of these teams meet weekly, look at all of the progress of all the current students who are receiving interventions, and then start to address the needs of students who have been referred in need of intervention. So these are all the people that are working together. It's an incredible team. I'm really lucky to be working with this. And if you go to the next slide, I kind of want to give you some updates on it. The referral system has proved really effective. It started to really pick up momentum last year in remote. Our teachers have done an incredible job providing tier one support. And then in students in need of tier two support, which is like more individualized plans, they make the referral. There's been 73 referrals made so far this year. That's a pretty high number considering it's only November. Oh, it's almost December. 36 students on their own have requested counseling or utilized our drop-in services. We have 51 students in or currently receiving or just ending our short-term counseling that we offer. We only offer short-term counseling for about 6 to 8 weeks, one session a week because of our limited mental health team. And we have 17 students who have returned from hospitalization and with an individual support plan. I point that out because 17 is a very high number. I think we had about 2 students return from hospitalization for wellness reasons, mental health reasons in the year 2018-19, 19-20 was a little bit different with the pandemic. We currently have 20 middle school students and 46 high school students with 504s. This is managed by Ms. Schultz and Ms. Snyder. We have 44 middle school students and 45 high school students with IEPs. I include that number because all students with IEPs and 504s are still part of the same tiered referral process. We don't just refer students to their SPED case manager. It's an inclusive model. But here's a big win. So we had summer school last June. Ms. Klesserath, Ms. Lara, and Mr. David Padula all actually offered courses in the summertime, and we have an integrated credit recovery class this year, which is specific to English 1 and 2, taught by Mr. Bob Marcacci. Because of this program, 3 students completed their credits and graduated without needing the 5th year of high school this year, and 64 current students are projected to be back on track for graduation. So that's a significant number of students who would have been facing this challenge, sort of that inevitable can kick down the road of being an 11th or 12th grader and needing credits. 64 students getting back on track through these two things is 15% of our high school. I know Mike's here to check my math, but I think it's right. So far, we're going to expand our academic support period. We have one now 2 days a week for high school. It's going to go to 5 days starting in January. and a middle school option as well. I share all of this because I think I just wanted to make sure the board and community members understand. We are limited. We are an incredible team and our bandwidth is stretched to so many things that are happening all at once. And we are limited into what we can provide for individual students, our response time, but also we really are working to improve our availability and resources for our current teachers. So I just wanted to kind of get a bigger scope on what also is happening in the past 3 months at OSA. So that's the big picture. I think that's my last slide. Thanks.
Next slide, please. Katie, thank you so much. And Kayla, thank you so much. I know that people have comments to share with both of you for the wonderful work that's happening and the processing that we're going through, but we'll have public comment right after the advancement report. I wanted to just share with the sentiments that Josefina shared earlier. We want to welcome Stephen Borg as the Director of Office of Advancement. Stephen is no stranger to OSA. He's been a part of our community for nearly 11 years, 3 years while his daughter was in middle school, and then almost 8 years following as a member of the OSA Board of Directors. And he has a wealth of experience in leading marketing, communications, and management work. So welcome, Stephen. We're thrilled to have you as a huge support for OSA in this new capacity and to join the faculty. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Next slide. Our annual fund. The Office of Advancement has met with the leadership of the APT and is looking forward to meeting with them again to build a strategy that involves more of our parent community in helping us reach the annual fund goal of $600,000 to raise. Currently, we've raised $130,000, which is about 22% of the $600,000 goal. And this year, we did not have our annual kickoff event due to the current circumstances at the school. However, we did raise $38,000 in the last 2 weeks since we launched the annual fund. And we want to keep that momentum building. We're in the process of planning our spring benefit, Heart of Oakland, and we predict at least $100,000 revenue in this event. Our goal for grants, foundations, and corporations is $300,000, and we're already at 57% of the goal. We are ahead of where we were last year in terms of fundraising for grants, foundations, and corporations, and we've raised about 30% of the $1 million goal. Next slide, please. There's been strategic planning work done regarding institutional giving. We've reached $171,000 year to date. Our pending grants total $121,000, and our proposals in development just for December total about $107,000. There's quite a bit of research being done to apply for highly probable grants to support our program. This research has really paid off, and we're already, as I shared before, at 57% of our grant fundraising goal. If you look at the total, the projected allotted grants coming into OSA by the end of December could place us at 399, which is $100,000 above our goal. I want to recognize our Office of Advancement team and their hard work and support in all their endeavors. Next slide, please. Giving Tuesday is today. Today's Tuesday, and it's Giving Tuesday. I want to thank our parents who have given and encouraged everyone to share the OSA link with families and friends to continue to donate. The window to donate for Giving Tuesday will go through Friday, and our goal is to raise $27,000 so that we can meet the match donation dollar for dollar to support the JEDI work. Last year, our goal was $20,000, and this year it's $27,000. And if we meet the match, that means we'll raise $54,000. So how did Giving Tuesday happen, and what work did we do to really launch this campaign? A Giving Tuesday information video was produced that featured Kayla, one of our newest members, and Kev Choice's jazz ensemble. And granted, the video did focus on IM. However, our intention is to share the creative spirit and joy of all of our arts programs. And for our upcoming events, we will be highlighting all of the arts. I'd like to thank members of the APT leadership who worked with the Office of Advancement to recruit parent volunteers to crowdfund. We also built a volunteer on how to create a web page for our volunteers. We initiated a Facebook fundraiser. Parents also started fundraising pages on OSA's campaign. We set up a non-social media donation platform for the OSA homepage. We had a text to donate account, and we have been promoting on social media, which is Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We continue to email annual fund donors directly and encourage them to join. Please continue to encourage your network of friends and family to donate. Our tracker, our online tracker, shows that we hit our goal and surpassed it. So we're a little over $27,000 so far. This is not a comprehensive number because we will be happy to share the final number in a few days. So please encourage people to keep pushing that donate button to support OSA. Next slide. So our annual fund update really is focused on the Office of Advancement's efforts. We sent a fall appeal letter in November, preparing December end of the year appeal letter, coordinating with our APT leadership for quarter one fundraising, and currently producing the annual fund informational video that will be shared with the community throughout the coming year. Next slide. And that ends the executive director's report.
Thank you, Lisa and team for that presentation. Let's open it up for public comment. Do we have any public comment?
There's nobody who's asking to speak, but there are definitely comments and celebrations and.
Great. So let's move on then to board comments or questions. Do we have any board comments or questions? Okay, seeing that there are none. Wylene, did you want to say something?
No, just great.
Okay.
Great work.
Yes. So I just really want to appreciate the work that's happening right now on multiple levels. I think that the, coordination of services and the increased amount of multidisciplinary services that have come in is very unique. And moving to a very comprehensive level of support. There's still work that will continue to be done, but I think that I do want to appreciate the work that has happened up to this point. And to again stress that, there's additional resources and the augmentation of the mental health team within OSA cannot just be a one-year deal. We have to figure out how to continue these services and continue to grow the services that are needed to really continue this work and the support that students and families need. So that ties directly into Advancement. Thank you to the Advancement team for continuing to be creative and to get the word out about the need and the outreach to the larger donor community. And thank you to the parents of OSA and the APT for your collaboration and support. So let's move this item on to our last item, and that is the finance report.
Hi, everyone. It's Susan Lefkowitz with CSMC. I can kick us off here tonight. We will be reviewing and approving the first interim financial report. And it looks like we've also got the educator effectiveness block grant, which I think Lisa's going to talk about. But just as a reminder, I wanted to start by just reminding you that interim reports are submitted twice during each fiscal year to provide an update on the school's financial condition. The first report is the first interim, and that covers all of your activity ending through October 31st. The second report, second interim, covers the period ending January 31st. So the governing board must approve each interim report no later than 45 days after the close of the reporting period. So for each interim report, schools essentially have to certify their ability to meet their obligations for the current and the two subsequent years after that. And then the interim budget includes projected revenues and expenses for the remainder of this school year. All right, so next slide, or first slide, I guess. Perfect. All right, so what we've done here is we have a summary. The first column there, I guess, on your left, you'll see the 21-22. That was your board adopted budget July 1. So at that time, we projected school enrollment of 820 with an attendance rate of 96%. So you'll see total revenue of $11,069,000 was projected, expenses at $11,049,000. So at that time, we were projecting a surplus of just under $20,000. The second column is the staff's revision. So this is the initial budget that staff brought to the finance committee. So that enrollment was based on 800 at 94%. So we did reduce the attendance rate. And then you'll see there was additional revenue and expenses, which we'll talk about in just a second. Because I really want to focus on the 21-22 Finance Committee recommendation. But the budget that was brought to the Finance Committee had a deficit of $59,439. So we met with the Finance Committee yesterday and made the decision that we really should be basing this budget on current enrollment. So this recommendation is based on current enrollment of 791, also at a 94% attendance rate. So you'll see, I got to move this out of the way so I can see. All right. So the result of that essentially lowered your LCFF revenue, so your state aid, your EPA, and your in lieu of property taxes by $485,575. So that's due to the lower enrollment and lower attendance rate. So that is a significant drop. However, state revenues increased due to in-person learning, the expanded learning opportunity grant, educator effectiveness grant. We had some deferred money, which was money we received last year but didn't spend, so we carried that forward into this year, and some additional special education revenues also. So the additional revenues, $455,457 over the July 1 budget. I also wanted to just point out when we're talking about these state budget programs, in the state budget this year, there was about 16 new programs that were introduced. We've only received information details and, you know, funding rates, et cetera, for about half of them. So the CDE is quite overwhelmed, I think, with all the new programs that were introduced. So we do expect possibly some more changes between now and probably second interim in February. So just wanted to point that out also. Local revenue was increased by $15,000 overall. So in total, revenue decreased from July to this recommendation by just over $11,000. So moving on to expenses, just wanted to point out just the overall shift. So the overall shift in all personnel expenses between salary and benefits was $23,054. Books and supplies was increased by $28,000, mostly for student equipment, I think as part of COVID funding and additional equipment for the students. Services and operating expenses increased almost $145,000. You'll see a breakdown down there below. $25,000 of that was for professional development, operations and housekeeping. I think that mainly was for cleaning and additional protocols for COVID that was required. We had slightly more storage rental for storage space than we had anticipated. We increased professional consulting by $42,500. And then we've seen an increase in legal fees over our original budget by $70,000. So just want to note, we did reduce overall space rental because we had overestimated one of the spaces. So we did reduce rent by $12,900. All in all, total expenses increased by $194,000 since July. And that leaves an ending deficit of $186,393 projected current year for right now. And then also wanted to point out that this does not include any of the COSAT salary increases that, are being proposed. I think that's all I have on this slide, unless anyone has any questions. Okay, so I think Mike
is going to
give you an enrollment update here.
Yeah, and I think there's actually a couple other points that I intended to add to it. Go ahead to the next slide though, please. Good evening, everyone. I was asked to kind of just chime in about enrollment, just to kind of explain. We budgeted for 820 and we're at 791. That is a significant impact, obviously, on the budget, somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000. So I just want to kind of give an explanation of what got us here, what we're doing to increase enrollment and, you know, all of that. So one thing I want to make clear is that though we budgeted for 820, we did that ambitiously coming out of a pandemic, not knowing exactly how things were going to unfold at the beginning of the school year. Our previous highest enrollment, I do want to remind people, was 779 students. So we were pretty ambitious to push for an overall increase of 41 students coming out of the pandemic. I still think we can meet that. It's going to take us a little time, but we're currently at 791. The highest we reached this year was around 798, and there's been ongoing fluctuation in general. 60 new students have been enrolled since the start of the school year, and I share this number to say it's not like we had 798 and over time we've lost a few students. We had many students on paper that did not show up for the first week of school. We've had many students leave throughout the school year. It's been ongoing work for Michaela Peters, and we meet regularly to kind of strategize, but 60 students have actually been added since the start of the school year. We are creating a semester two recruitment strategy. Our main hurdle is actually facilities. We have a wait list in many grade levels and many different sub pathways, but we don't have the facilities to support it. So our recruitment strategy needs to be very detailed and very nuanced to specifically reach out to try to communicate to families where we have space and encourage people to apply. We intend to get that communication out early next week. And another kind of like bright spot in the near future is somewhere around March, we're going to be moving into our new design visual media space. And that's going to allow an immediate increase in both digital media and visual art in terms of hitting our targets there that we're unable to meet right now based on our current facilities constraints. And we're actually looking at starting semester two because we do have wait lists in those departments, to considering letting students in those departments who will be able to attend academic classes and then join in the arts classes once we have the new facilities available to us. So that would obviously be up to the families if that's something they're interested in, but it's kind of a creative way to potentially increase enrollment. So I support the budgeting of the 791 because it's conservative and realistic in this circumstance. I don't want to mislead us, but we're still trying to raise it higher. We're still shooting for 800 and above. Just want to make sure that we're managing expectations while doing so. And that's it
for Mike. I guess we should also point out too that this is a problem we're seeing across the state. Districts, charters, I mean, you've probably experienced and seen that from your own families and in local schools also, but it is a statewide problem.
Yeah, and I guess with that, I'm grateful that even with this problem at schools where they're facing like 20% decrease from previous years, we're very fortunate mm-hmm. to have our highest enrollment ever. It's just not meeting our financial needs in this moment.
Can I make one other point? On the last slide, when we were talking about the consultants, the increase in consultants, that actually was, we moved some money from the HR position and the advancement director position into consultants and reduced salaries. So we didn't add additional consultants, but it was kind of shifting that budget around a little bit.
Thank you, Susan and Mike, for that. I think we have what's the next item on the finance agenda? Is it the block grant?
It is the block grant.
So we've actually, Yeah, and Josefina, we've actually included slides that show the breakdown, the actual first interim report. It's also on your website with your board packet incomplete.
Okay. Do you want to, let's see, I know we have to approve that tonight, right? We need a vote. Let me see if yes. there's a public comment on this before we go to the board discussion and vote. Let's see, any public comment?
I don't either.
Okay, then let's go to the board. Do we have board questions or comments?
I'd like to make a comment. I just want everyone to know that I supported this change, the revision. Not that I support the deficit, but I wanted us to be truthful in our reporting on this and show what our true enrollment in ADA is. And unfortunately, there are circumstances.
And that recommendation was supported by myself as well in the finance committee. I think, you know, we do want to be realistic. And that's not to say that, as Mike indicated, that we will, you know, be satisfied with the 791. I think there are specific strategies that are ongoing to increase the enrollment, but this is the reality of the budget situation at this time. Also reinforces the importance of development and Giving Tuesday. You'll see that we have a $1 million goal, and that was the goal before we understood that we would be dealing with this current deficit. So in reality, you know, we really need to exceed the $1 million goal. Any other board questions or comments?
I have a question, and Michaela actually has a public comment. Are we taking more public comments first?
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and take that first?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, me being at the center of enrollment, it sometimes it feels like, you know, I have a bucket that has a leak and I fill it with water and, you know, it comes out at the other end. But, you know, the number 791 is already higher because I know that there is three students who are coming in. One is returning, who was a student last year, went to Skyline, doesn't like it there, is returning to OSA. So we are at 794, but that's starting on January 4th because, you know, it doesn't make any sense to have them come in now. And in the meantime, I'm working on at least getting it up to 800. Just wanted to let you know that Mike and I are really working hard on getting our numbers up.
Well, that would be fantastic. Thank you and Mike for those efforts. Okay, so let's keep going. We're a little bit beyond our time now. We still have to get to the special meeting. So do you wanna share the other slide, Susan, and we can entertain a motion?
Sure, yeah, David, if you wanna just scroll down. Please, next slide.
Okay, just give me a minute. I was about to switch to the block grant documents. So this one?
No, just the next slide on the presentation.
Okay, yeah, after enrollment update, this is the next slide?
Yes.
So,
yep, so one more after that.
One more after this one too.
Yes, okay. There you go. Right. So this is just a summary tab of the actual first interim report. So it shows, again, the first interim, all the details of the July 1 budget. The yellow column there is all your actuals. So that's everything you've received and or spent through October 31st. And then the orange column is the budget that we are just talking about with the 186 deficit. So I think we skipped I think we must have skipped the revenue. Is there one slide ahead of that one? We're up from that one.
This is the previous one and it says revenues.
Yeah, that is the revenues.
Oh, it still says expenses on my screen. Okay, so you're seeing the revenues then. Yes. There you go. Okay. Okay, perfect, thank you. Yep, so same thing. So revenues, the actuals in the yellow column are what you've actually received to date, and then first interim budget in the orange. And then it shows the, can't see the, yeah, then it shows the difference there in the blue.
Should I go to
okay. So
yeah, just if you're gonna scroll through three slides, it just gives detail. But like I said, this is all available also in detail on the website too.
Okay, any board questions? Okay, we need a motion to authorize the finance committee to submit the first interim on behalf of the board and to meet the OSA deadline. I mean, the OUSD deadline.
Safina, yes? I just want to clarify at this point, since the interim is done, do we need the authorization for finance committee or are we just approving the interim?
You are correct. I think we can just go ahead and approve. It does not need to go back to the finance committee to do that. So let's, we can entertain a motion to approve the first interim and submit to OUSD.
I move to approve the first interim upon the finance committee's recommendation to submit to OUSD.
Okay. Second, we need a second.
I'm giving a second.
Thank you, Wylene. Thank you, Dwayne, as well. Any other board discussion on this item? Okay, let's go to the roll call vote. So, Adrian Barnes.
Yes.
Thank you. Wylene Newber.
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman.
Yes.
Thank you. And Dwayne Walton.
Yes.
Thank you. And I will also vote yes, Josefina Alvarado Mena. So this is approved. Let's go to the block grant.
David, could you pull up the block grant on the tab and we can quickly go through that? So this is the block grant that was shared with the board in our last board meeting to kind of explain what we were doing, what we were interested in. This was surveyed with the staff and we went through this. So just real quickly, if we scroll down, number one is one of the places that we wanted to apply for. So we have $52,340 slated for coaching and mentoring of staff. There's a full, I'm sitting here pointing to my screen. There's a full paragraph here that you all can read, but that's the focus there. If we scroll down a little further on number four, here are strategies to implement for social emotional learning, trauma enforced practices, suicide prevention, et cetera. There is $52,340 slated there. And for number five, which is practices to create a positive school climate, including but not limited to restorative justice training. And this is all aligns with some of the work that we are doing currently. And there's $44,862 slated there. So those are the three. This is a five-year grant, which approximately would give us about $30,000 a year for the next 5 years. It's a total of $149,543.
Okay, any public comment on this?
I don't see any.
Okay, board discussion on this item? And if there's no board discussion, then we can take a motion to accept.
Quick question, Lisa, did this change at all from the public hearing?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, so we still need a motion to adopt or accept.
A motion that we accept the educator effectiveness block grant.
Nice second.
Thank you. Any board discussion? No board discussion. So let's go ahead with the vote. Adrian Barnes.
Yes.
Thank you. Wylene Huber.
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman.
Yes.
Thank you. And Dwayne Walton.
Yes.
Thank you. And I will also vote yes, Josefina Alvarado Mena. So that concludes the agenda for this regular meeting. Thank you everybody for the presentations and for joining us in the public comment. And we are adjourned. We will reconvene immediately into the special meeting.